This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The World Food Programme Zimbabwe country representative says the agency has a backlog of beneficiaries that need cash assistance to buy food because the government ruled the Zimbabwe dollar is the only legal trading currency.
That's reporter Rutendo Maweri on how cash shortages are hurting efforts to provide aid to the hungry in Zimbabwe. Details coming up also. At least three people died when a six-story residential building collapsed today in Nairobi. And faith-based organizations in Africa are being urged to encourage followers to use condoms rather than preach that AIDS is a curse from God. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, several activists pushing for prevention of HIV/AIDS are urging faith-based organizations in Africa to encourage followers to use condoms rather than preach that AIDS is a curse from God. They made this call during this week's International Conference on AIDS and Sexuality Transmitted Diseases in Africa. Eugene Wimana has the details from the conference in Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
People who have dedicated their lives to sensitizing the use of HIV preventive methods say their efforts are hampered by faith-based organizations which preach that those methods are evil.
I'm the self-declared king of condom.
Stanley Lengala is a 47-year-old Kenyan activist. He's known for his nickname, King of Condom. His attire and everything he says promotes the use of condoms to prevent HIV.
I promote condom because I want people to have peaceful sex. Sex that you're gonna no regret, sex that is free from HIV, free from STI, free from unintended pregnancy.
Ngara, who hopes to have a king of condom in every African country, says religious people can undermine his work.
How is your kingdom doing?
It is great because I have now seen a lot of volunteers. I have a Ghana king of condom that we're gonna crown. My dream is to have a king of condoms and princes and prince all over Africa, people that can talk about condom every day. But one thing I believe, the way church insists on tithe, the way church insists on Ten Commandments, if they can insist on HIV prevention strategy, my friend, HIV is gone.
Other evangelists whose lives were affected by HIV/AIDS suggest that preventive mechanism should not be forgotten in sermons. Reverend Jide McCauley is an openly gay British Nigerian born in London who serves as a Christian minister and HIV-positive activist.
Because we say knowledge is power. Religious leaders need to understand that HIV is a virus, it's not a crime. And HIV is a virus, is not an abomination. And it's not a punishment from God, because we've had so many things that HIV is a punishment from God because people are having sex.
Other evangelists say they have seen the impact of teaching HIV prevention and that faith-based organizations need to retrain preachers. Reverend Fumzile Mabiezela is from South Africa and is the executive director of INERER, the international network of religious leaders living or personally affected by HIV/AIDS.
When we train religious leaders on issues of human dignity, on issues of human rights, on issues of sexuality, we expect them to go out and empower those who do not have the knowledge.
The World Health Organization estimates that in Africa, between 30% and 70% of the health infrastructure is owned by faith-based organizations. The WHO says the world really needs the support of these organizations to save lives. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
At least three people died when a six-story residential building collapsed today in Nairobi. Officials say 21 people were rescued. People scrambled with their hands to remove the rubble, then cheered as the survivors were pulled on and put on stretchers to be taken for treatment. The incident occurred in Tasiya Estate, a densely populated neighborhood near the international airport. The building had 57 units. It was just the latest housing collapse in Nairobi, where shoddy construction and flouted regulations have resulted in deadly accidents. Suspected militia fighters have decapitated 16 people near a village in Beni in northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The French news agency reports the killings in the village yesterday had been blamed on the Allied Democratic Forces, ADF, a militia group responsible for a string of massacres since the start of November. DRC forces launched operations against the ADF in the eastern region at the end of October. In response, the ADF has carried out massacres in an apparent bid to discourage civilians from helping the military. At least 100 people have been killed since November 5th in an attack blamed on the ADF, an Islamist-rooted militia with origins in Uganda. No military sources would officially confirm yesterday's report, but the Congolese army and UN troops deployed to the vast country have announced joint operations against ADF forces in the Beni region. The attacks complicate efforts to end an outbreak of Ebola in the area. In Zimbabwe, the World Food Program says cash shortages are hurting efforts to provide aid to the hungry. Rutendo Maweri reports from Harare.
The World Food Programme Zimbabwe country representative says the agency has a backlog of beneficiaries that need cash assistance to buy food because the government ruled the Zimbabwe dollar is the only legal trading currency. In June, the government ended the old system of allowing several currencies in commerce, including the US dollar and the rand. WFP Director Eddie Rowe said, as a result of the current policy, his agents now suffers cash shortages and has not been able to provide money for food assistance.
After the SI-142, where we can no longer distribute US dollar cash, we have to convert the US dollars into Zim dollars in order for us to be able to provide the cash transfers. We have been facing challenges in accessing cash. As I speak to you, we have a backlog of assistance in some districts. I give you one. Gokwe North. Since August, we've not been able to provide Gokwe North with the cash assistance.
Rowe said on Thursday the agency has managed to access 10 million Zimbabwean dollars. It will prioritize areas like Gokwe North and Chipinge, which have not received help for several months. Zimbabwe's economy has been in steep decline over the past few years, and it is suffering inflation estimated to be over 300% a year. There are shortages of medicines, fuel, and cash, which are crippling normal operations. A prolonged drought adds to the problems. The United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, Hilal Elva, last month said Zimbabwe is on the verge of a man-made starvation. She urged the government to make rapid economic and agricultural reforms. The WFP's role said, due to the cash shortages, the agency now plans to provide food aid to the rural areas instead of the cash.
As of January, we've made the conscious decision that all the 3.9 million people in the rural areas would be assisted with in-kind food basket. The 200,000 that we plan to target in the urban areas, we would provide through the Econet mobile cash, mobile money transfer.
Both said that means the WFP has to buy over 200,000 metric tons of food between now and January. He said that the challenge is that Zambia, where it used to buy grain, also saw its harvest fall because of the drought. Rowe said the agents will have to look further away to get food. The World Food Programme says more than 7 million people in Zimbabwe need food aid, but the agency has received only about 30% of the $293 million it needs to help them. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Diplomats, UN agency heads, and non-governmental organizations converged this week to discuss rebuilding towns and villages scarred by the separatist war in Cameroon. Cameroon's government says it needs help reconstructing destroyed schools and public buildings. Those in attendance said they are willing to help but want to make sure the war is permanently over. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Prime Minister Joseph John Gute, who convened the meeting on behalf of the government, pleaded with the international community to help reconstruct Cameroon after close to 4 years of bloody conflicts that have killed thousands and caused severe damage in dozens of towns and villages. Gute says most citizens are opting for peace because they are tired of all the killings.
The label of Cameroon being a peace-loving and stable country has been destroyed. And Cameroonians of all walks of life, from all the four corners of the country, think that it is time for us to regain that status which we once had as a peaceful country, a country to which other people came for refuge, a country that received people rather than sent out people.
Representatives from about 24 of the 75 diplomatic missions, United Nations agencies, and international NGOs in Cameroon attended the meeting. John Gute did not say if all of them were invited, but said some had told him they had other tight schedules. Philippe Larieux, chargé d'affaires of the French embassy in Yaoundé, says France was ready to contribute to the reconstruction plans.
We have 62 million euros that can be devoted to the reconstruction of the northwest and south region, and it's up to the government of Cameroon to ask this amount for the reconstruction of these two regions.
Jean-Luc Stallon, representative of the United Nations Development Programme, says his institution will assist in the reconstruction plan once they are certain that peace has returned. But it is not clear when the fighting will end, as fighting between separatists and government troops are reported almost on a daily basis, though with less intensity than in the past. The meeting took place shortly after delegates dispatched by the government on so-called peace caravans trip returned from trips to discuss the outcome of the recent national dialogue hosted by the government in Yaoundé. Catholic Bishop Andrew Nkea led one caravan to the English-speaking southwest region. He says many people want a return to peace.
The population is tired. They want to return to normal life. One of the things we told our population was that there are so many recommendations we made during the major national dialogue, and some of those resolutions are already set for implementation. But without a peaceful atmosphere, it will be difficult to get to those recommendations.
Officials did not disclose how much money Cameroon needs for the reconstruction, but in 2018, the Central African State launched a $23 million emergency humanitarian assistance plan for hundreds of thousands of its citizens who the government said were living in precarious conditions in Cameroon and Nigeria due to the separatist conflict. The separatists launched their war in 2016, citing alleged domination by the country's French-speaking majority. Since 2016, the war has killed close to 3,000 people and displaced 500,000. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies: 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Faith-based organizations in Africa are being urged to encourage followers to use condoms rather than preach that AIDS is a curse from God. At least three people died when a six-story residential building collapsed today in Nairobi. And in Zimbabwe, the World Food Program says cash shortages are hurting efforts to provide aid to the hungry. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. South Africa's tax authority recently destroyed more than $500,000 worth of imported goods, including more than 13,000 bales of clothing, just as many South Africans are staring down a tight holiday season and a sluggish economy. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell looks into the logic behind the move.
It seems like a tragedy. The destruction of a veritable mountain of imported clothes, shoes, and accessories worth more than $500,000. The mountain of clothes was a tragedy, says Patrick Moyang, the executive for customs investigations in the South African Revenue Service. Just not in the way that many South Africans see it.
We have noticed over a period of time since about 2006, even earlier than that, 2001, that there have been a negative impact which was brought about by the proliferation of cheap clothing items into the market, which led to the closure of a number of manufacturing firms that were responsible for employing a number of people. So many people lost their jobs, and those firms, when they close down, you are not able to create new employment, which actually leads to a spiraling effect of a number of different ills that the society faces and so on.
Now for the math portion of this story. South Africa has long struggled with high unemployment, hitting an unprecedented level of 29% this year. Also this year, the nation's manufacturing sector shrank by nearly 4%. What that adds up to for a lot of struggling South Africans is outrage that the authorities couldn't just, say, give the clothes away, or at least let people have access to cheap clothes. Many items in the latest haul, Moyang says, were perfectly usable. They included children's clothes, shoes, and blankets. Tracy Gilmore was also familiar with those dismal numbers when she founded the Clothing Bank, a business training project, in 2010. The nationwide program takes in some 2 million pieces of unsold or returned clothing items each year from major South African retailers. But surprisingly, she says she supports destruction of the seized clothing. She explains.
The South African retail industry creates 16 million jobs, and counterfeit clothing destroys jobs. So it's a really difficult conversation. It's a really difficult topic because we do have a huge poverty problem in South Africa. But you can't endorse illegal activities. You can't accept that. And I mean, how would one reasonably redistribute all of that stock?
Other African countries have also taken seemingly counterintuitive steps to protect local industry. In 2016, the East African nations of Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda hiked tariffs on imports of secondhand clothing. The U.S. retaliated with threats to existing trade deals, causing Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda to ease their stance. But Rwanda has stood firm on its refusal to back down, saying the cheap imported clothes are hurting local manufacturing. Moyang says jobs are ultimately more important than cheap clothes, and notes that South African retailers produce a wide range of locally made garments. He also says that when authorities tried to give away the seized clothing, they ran into more problems.
We used to donate such goods to the non-government organizations that are responsible for distributing those goods to the needy of our country and things like that. But there was a procedure that needed to be followed with regard to that. But as a result of the challenges and the risk that we have identified through the distribution or the donation of those items into the NGOs, we found out that such goods do not find their ways to the needy people where they were supposed to be going.
And so, as the holidays approach and the seized clothes emerge from the shredder, South Africans are being asked what they really want. A cheap shirt or a strong economy? Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Kenya's public prosecutor has ordered the arrest of Nairobi's governor on suspicion of economic crimes. In a news conference today, the prosecutor said the governor and his associates illegally procured more than $3.5 million in public money. Rael Ambor reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's public prosecutor Nurdin Haji on Friday ordered the immediate arrest and prosecution of Nairobi County Governor Gideon Mbuvi. He said the governor and nearly a dozen senior Nairobi County officials face charges of unlawful acquisition of public property, money laundering, and other economic crimes. According to Haji, investigations by Kenya's Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission found enough evidence to warrant arrest and prosecution of Mbuvi and his co-accused.
In making this decision, the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution is cognizant of the principle of innocence until proven guilty, the determination of which can only be made by a court of law. The decision to charge is based on the evidence that is available to the DPP at the time the decision is made.
Last month, Mbuvi tried to stop the Corruption Commission from investigating him, but the court declined to issue a temporary restraint order. In Friday's briefing, Haji warned Mbuvi's supporters against any attempts to subvert the cause of justice.
In recent times, we have seen that corruption fights back, and there have been blunted, misguided attempts to intimidate, threaten, and malign investigating officers and agencies. We shall not allow such dastardly acts to go on, and I have directed the law enforcement agencies to investigate any such attempts, and upon establishment of evidence, additional charges shall be preferred against those perpetrating these acts.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has in the past said that he will not relent in the country's fight against corruption until the country is swept clean of the practice. For critics such as political analyst Herman Manyora, those kind of comments sound like mere talk.
Even all this drama around the arrest, what is a single conviction? Even in instances where people have owned up for having received money from NYS without having tendered for anything, they have admitted as much. They are not in jail. So where is the will? I'm not convinced there's a will to fight corruption.
In the slums of Nairobi, Mbuvi commands a lot of support because he has presented himself as a defender of the poor, one who provides useful projects and jobs. Sammy Olo, who leads a garbage collection unit, blamed politics on the governor's woes. He said he is the governor and he has tried. He is looking at all corners in Nairobi. The youth in Dandora, Kayole, Huruma are at work. They should instead support him to help the youth. That's better than these politics that they are playing for their own interests. Despite the vows by Kenyatta and his predecessors, corruption has remained deeply entrenched in Kenya for decades. The 2018 Corruption Perception Index by Transparency International listed Kenya as the 144th most corrupt country out of 180 in the world. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa. Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.